Welcome to Mysterious Japan, Season 1, Episode 5, Corpse Hunters. Listener discretion is advised. If you ask Kiyotaka Churisaki what he is, he will say he is an artist. His specialty is corpse photography. In 25 years, he has photographed thousands of corpses. But this may not be what you think it is. Most of his photos are for the police. For crime scenes, to be more specific, or whenever authorities need pictures of corpses for legal reasons. This is his day job. But this peculiar line of work has led him to think of this from an artistic perspective. As an artist, he notes how difficult it is in Japan to find corpses to photograph. But of course, Jukai is the exception. He goes there, not just for his day job to assist police, but also as an artist. To find corpses there, he puts his psychological state of mind into the state as someone going there to commit suicide. He says,
"They go up abandoned roads, with off-limits signs, branching off the promenade. These are former nature trails that have been maintained, so even if they are not dressed for hiking, they can walk comfortably. Then they walk into the forest within 300 meters of the promenade. How far they go depends on their physical strength and psychological lead. Closer to the promenade, their bodies are more likely to be found by hikers or corpse hunters. So I think they usually move about 300 meters out, if they don't want to be found."
From this central area, he follows what he calls the suicide path. This is where he often finds skeletonized remains. He says that most who hang themselves will decay until their head separates from the body and the remains fall in a pile on the ground. These are hard to find, but he occasionally finds some still hanging. That area is what he calls the Green Hell. Kiyotaka shows great respect for the dead. If he moves any of the remains, he does so only for artistic purposes. He will not photograph if he cannot find a head or skull. He sometimes leans close to the body and sympathetically says to the remains,
"I have given you new life today through my photographs."
He also uses his nose. He says to his companions, "Let's focus on this area. It smells a little dead." They search out the smell of decay and watch for animals, especially circling crows. On this day, he follows a rotten odor and discovers two corpses intertwined on the ground. They appear to be a male and female who died together after poisoning themselves. This is called Shinju, also known as a lover's suicide pact. They are all too common in Japan and have only been exacerbated by the internet, where like-minded people socialize about their ideations of suicide rather than seeking proper mental health treatment. He clarifies that he does not exploit death, nor does he take any morbid pleasure in finding bodies.
"I focus on the ideological philosophy of death, how it is more than just the physical nature of the corpse, even though we are animals with animal sensations."
Kiyotaka does not report remains to the police, though he understands this may upset some people. He says,
"The dignity of these people in committing suicide in Jukai is that they came here to die away from society in private and in nature. They want to be united with Jukai. What the nature of the corpse teaches is the abyss."
The nature of the corpse may teach us about the abyss, but Kiyotaka's artistic endeavors are not without controversy. But far more controversial is a unique phenomenon given birth by Jukai. These are groups called the Corpse Hunters. Unlike Kiyotaka, they come to satisfy their own morbid curiosity. In Japan, they are called corpse maniacs, but they prefer the term corpse enthusiasts. This peculiar brand of hobbyists, as they label themselves, remains obsessively secretive about their so-called hobby. If their names were to come out publicly, they would become social pariahs. They would be subject to societal shame, so they continue their covert ventures into the forest on weekends and days off without telling anyone what they are doing. When they find bodies, they do not report their findings. Doing so would only involve them with the authorities for many hours and raise questions about their repeated visits to the forest. This is troubling to the police, who believe that any findings should be reported so that remains can be identified and families contacted. One of these corpse hunters agreed to speak on the condition of anonymity. He tenses and speaks nervously, as if already regretting his decision to talk.
I can't tell you my name. Just call me Mr. K.
Mr. K is in his 40s. His mild-mannered behaviours and soft speech belie this strange weekend obsession. Knowing the man's hobby, it is strange to see that he has a gentle smile when discussing corpse hunting. This is more off-putting than comforting, but Mr. K seems oblivious to this.
I'm just a normal office worker at a large company. I indulge in my hobby whenever I have spare time. My first time was when I was on a normal expedition group in Jukai. Then I smelled rotting flesh, and when I looked around, I saw a corpse hanging from a tree. What struck me is that it did not resemble bodies you see in the movies or the zombies on television. No, it struck me as ugly and gloomy. The face was swollen, red, and black. The eyes, nose, and mouth were overflowing with a gel-like substance, smearing down the front of the dark blue shirt.
Yet the sight fascinated Mr. K. He started going to Jukai alone, or with a group every weekend.
They asked me what I was doing on my day off. I couldn't tell them I was going to search for corpses. I decided to buy a fast luxury car, but not because I have an affinity for cars. I don't care about cars. I just wanted to drive as fast as possible on my days off so I can get to Jukai as quickly as possible.
When he is asked what method he uses to search for corpses, Mr. K says that it is mostly blind luck, but he discovered the best way to increase probability is by increasing the number of eyes searching. This led to the formation of the corpse enthusiast group. They gather in the center of Jukai and spread out. They take a few steps and look around. Then they take a few more steps and look around again. When asked what they are looking for exactly, since the forest is so dense and irregular, Mr. K says.
We look for colours, any colour that doesn't normally exist in nature. Most colours in Jukai are brown, black or green. If it is not just bones, we might see it. We also follow the plastic tape.
On this occasion, Mr. takes the reporter to the forest while he describes what they do. Together, they follow a thread of blue plastic tape through the trees. At the end of the tape, they find nothing. However, for Mr. K, the end of the plastic tape is just the beginning of the search. He walks deeper into the forest, scanning the ground and trees closely. The reporter looks back at the tape as they walk, worried about losing his way if they wander too far. Mr. K says, just as I thought. And he stoops down by a tree. The reporter looks down and sees human remains at the bottom of the tree. This one is hardly more than a skeleton. The bones of the upper body are disjointed and the skull is missing. Some flesh still clings on the lower half of the body. Mr. K says,
"Look here. The blue of the man's jeans remain clean and blue while the body itself is returning to nature. Ah well, I suppose a skeleton is better than nothing, but there is a certain level of rotting that is perfect to find."
The reporter is taken aback by this bizarre comment. He thinks to himself, what does a perfect level of rotting mean? But he does not inquire further.
We're like a secret society. We're not breaking any laws or anything, but we know what we do on our weekends is not socially acceptable, especially since we don't report the bodies. If we do, it takes up our whole day, and is mendo kusei, a pain in the neck. We'd rather use that time to search for more corpses.
The reporter asks him what his thoughts are about the international attention that Jukai has recently been receiving. His response is filled with bile and disgust.
I hate it. I absolutely hate it. We call this the Jukai boom. Foreigners are coming to the forest more and more in the last few years. They see the Japanese run this tape from the promenade trail, and they copy it to go deep into the forest themselves. We see them running their plastic tape, and we sometimes go behind them and just cut their tape out of spite. They don't belong here. It will be interesting if they lose their way in the forest.
The reporter is shocked by this. He can't contain his outrage, and he asks, but isn't that tantamount to murder? What if they can't find their way back to the trail? Mr. K's response is a snort and a dismissive remark.
I don't create corpses. I just find them. Besides, no one dies from having the tape cut. They immediately return to the trail. It's just our way of harassing them. The foreigners probably think it is the curse of the forest. They probably think some ghost or demon is trying to make them get lost.
Mr. K thinks this is funny and laughs at his own statement, but the reporter is not amused. As they walk back toward the parking lot, the reporter asks Mr. K if he intends to end his own life at Jukai someday. This earns another derisive laugh.
Like I said, I find corpses. I don't create them. The thrill is in finding the corpses. Creating corpses is not what we do. But do you want to know what the scariest thing is that I've seen in the forest? I saw a fresh corpse laying on the ground. I started to approach it. It was an old man with two books next to his body. I assumed they must have been those two suicide books people bring with them. I just stood there and stared for a couple of minutes. And then it happened. The corpse moved its neck. The old man was still alive. So I went back and hid behind a tree, watching for a few more minutes to see if the man was dying. But he didn't die, so I left the area. I thought this man must be some guy living in the forest. I returned to the place a little later, and the man was gone. But the two books were there. They were actually suspense novels, not the suicide books. That's when I decided that there really is a crazy old man living somewhere in the forest.
The reporter finds this more interesting and less macabre than everything else that has come out of Mr. K's mouth this day. He finds the energy to chuckle to himself. Mr. K continues.
So you see, a living person is the scariest thing I've seen in Jukai. But I suppose if you think about it a little more, you could say that if the old man saw me standing above him watching, he probably thought the opposite. To him, maybe the scariest thing in Jukai was me.
The reporter is not sure if that is true, but his own opinion is that Mr. K and his group of so-called hobbyists are probably the scariest thing in Jukai. This next story is perhaps one of the strangest and most unbelievable story related by someone going into Jukai to hunt for corpses. It happened when he was in college many years ago. This is Ukyo's story.
As a college student, I went with my friends to Jukai about 9 times. I don't know why, really. I felt lonely and wanted to find someone's remains. They called such people Arps hunters. But for me, I just wanted to bring back bones. I thought it was something cool that most people don't have. I've moved on with life, but that was a different time. And Jukai wasn't as touristy then as it is now. So I wanted to find a corpse, bring back some bones, and or maybe I would get lucky and see a ghost. We camp over a weekend, so it was important to go early, find a place and set up your tent while there's still some light because it's dark there during the day, but the dark at night is so absolute and will just drive you crazy. Jukai is just a beautiful place with mysterious sights, and the lava rocks and caves are like a twisted caramel monster. That's a weird comparison, but it's the best way I can think to explain it. The roots of trees wrap like snakes around all the loose gaps of rock, and there are holes everywhere. There might be tall trees, but when they get too tall, they can't be supported on the lava ground and they come crashing down. If you go with sneakers on, you'll sprain your ankle, maybe even break your leg. But I'm glad there is a place on Earth like this that rejects the interference of people. You should never go by yourself. Everyone knows that. But if you have too many people, you have to be careful. One of them will probably be crazy. No, really. So I just went with one or two trusted friends each time. This is about what happened on my last visit, and you'll know why it's my last visit after you hear this. So I went with Shirai, a friend from college. We were both juniors at the time, though. His father was a lawyer, so I thought if I got on his good side and needed to borrow some money, he could help me. But Shirai had never been camping. The whole way there, he kept telling me he really wanted to see a ghost. He was obsessed with trying to find a ghost. We planned a 3-day, 2-night trip. I'd wander, but like, I wanted to stay longer, but it's too hard to stay long because you have to hike in with all your food and drink. And what's like goes without saying, I guess, that we had to go to school too. This was Shirai's first time at Jukai. And like I said, it was my 9th time. He was taking pictures of the warning signs and everything around him. He looked like a total tourist. We went deep into the forest and searched all day, but we didn't find anything. No bodies anyway. At one point on our hike, we saw an old rotting car. Who goes out of their way to get rid of a car in Jukai, in the middle of the forest? What a waste, and how did they get it there? Such mysteries are just a part of Jukai. Around late afternoon, we found a discarded handkerchief, plastic bottle, and backpack. On the ground next to them, we found a long piece of blue vinyl tape, almost invisible against the ground. It led to a tree where it had been tied around the trunk, but there was no body or signs of a noose hanging from the tree. While Shirai took pictures, I examined the items inside the backpack. I found two pairs of old shoes and a notebook. The rain and weather had damaged the notebook so much that it was essentially pulped between two covers. I set the shoes and other items at the base of the tree. So Shirai asked what happened to the person who did this. I replied, I guess he couldn't find someplace more flat. So he says, but where's the body? I responded flippantly, who knows, maybe already found, maybe taken by the police, maybe animals got to it. I thought it strange that the police wouldn't gather these items too, but if the suicide was not right at this spot, they might not see the items at all. Even the blue tape tied around the tree was hard to see. Sure, I took pictures constantly, hoping to catch some photographic evidence of a ghost or psychic phenomenon, but there was no corpse, no bones, and nothing indicating the supernatural. By then it was getting dark, shadows draped the trees and spread darkness on the ground. We decided to pitch tents there. We laid down a large piece of cardboard over the flattest and softest dirt we could find just downhill from the tree and set up two pup tents. Shirai had never set up a tent before and needed help with tying the anchor rope to the tree and pounding the spikes in the ground. When that was done, we lit a fire, cooked dinner, and let night settle in. To me, nights at Jukai are completely different than anywhere else in the world. There's the feeling of desolation. The trees seem to make noise as they sway in the wind and the branches creak. Leaves crackle and fall to the ground. And even worse, we couldn't see anything outside the light of our tiny fire. After about a 10-foot radius, it was just pitch black. We sat silently staring at the fire for a long time. Four or five times, Shirai looked up at me and said, what? Huh? I would just respond that I didn't say anything. Then he suddenly jumped and looked behind him. I was like, what the hell, Shirai? He told me he heard someone talking. Of course, he started taking pictures in the direction of the voice. I don't know if he was more scared or excited, but I do know that each picture flash was like lightning. It gave a split moment of brightness where it illuminated the dark trees like some monochrome strobe light. It hurt my eyes. So I said, you're imagining things because you want one to see something? Shirai just ignored my teasing. For a long time, he would look left, then right and say, did you hear that? All the while, he took pictures with the flash on. I told him it was just the sounds of the forest. I stared at the fire so the flashes wouldn't give me a headache. But at one point, sudden movement jarred me to attention. I shined my light quickly in that direction. Those two pairs of shoes I found in the backpack, remember those? We had set them by the tree, but now they were rolling down the hill. They stopped at the edge of Shirai's tent. Weird, but perhaps not supernatural. We just decided to go to bed. After a while, I don't know, maybe midnight or so, I woke to the sound of crying. It came from Shirai's tent. Sounded like a soft sobbing. But so I didn't know what his problem was, so I just turned over and went back to sleep. The next morning, we searched around the tree. Certainly back on bones. I asked him about the crying, and he said he didn't cry. I said, right, whatever. And we kept looking. I did find what looked like small bones from a finger or toe, but what I really wanted was a skull. I just wanted to find something to show off. I could polish it and keep it on a shelf and never come back to Jukai again. That whole day, sure, I said he won, felt sick. He spent most of the day by the fire. He had trouble lifting his right arm. He said he must have been laying on top of it all night and now it hurt. Unlike the previous day, he took no pictures and just sat there with a vacuous look in his eyes and a pensive attitude. Since he didn't feel well, we decided to keep our tents where they were. We ate dinner in silence until Shirai finally spoke up. It's about last night, he started. I said, yes, what about it? I'm thinking that maybe he will explain the crime. But then he said something super crazy, I mean, pure loco shit. He says, why'd you get in my tent? Were you cold? I looked at him in bewilderment. I said, what are you talking about? I never went in your tent. Like, he shrugged and said, oh, well, someone was. It was so dark, I thought it was you. If that wasn't you, then who is it? That was too much for me. I knew I made a big mistake bringing him. Like hearing, hearing sounds and like seeing shadows is one thing, but thinking someone is sleeping next to him, that was too much. Like I said, there's always gonna be that one crazy guy, but we had to get through the night. I went to my tent. After a while, Shirai put out the fire and went to his own tent. Well, a bit later, I was reading a book by the light of my flashlight and it was about 9 o'clock p.m. That's when I heard Shirai taking in deep, forced breaths as if something was wrong. I called out, "Are you okay, Shira?" He didn't respond, so I said in a louder voice, "So what's going on?" He still didn't answer, so I unzipped my tent and took two steps over to his tent. For some reason, the two pairs of shoes from the old backpack were lined up neatly right in front of his tent. This was just more proof to me that he was going a bit crazy. I opened the front flap and peered inside, shining the flashlight right at him. Shirai sat up, covering his eyes with his arm. He was chewing on something. I said, "What's wrong?" Seemed genuinely surprised. He said, "Wrong, nothing. Why do you say that?" A bit exasperated, I said, "Why did you make those strange sounds? And what is that strangled voice?" He just said calmly, "I didn't make a sound." He pulled out the thing he was chewing on. It was beef jerky. After that, I was unable to sleep, so I restarted the campfire when the light struck him in the tent.
Yeah.
I remember that Shirai had been sweating despite the cold. I wondered if maybe he had a bay fever. That would explain the delirium and the weirdness. I told myself if he goes crazy, that's fine, whatever. But I don't want to die out here. He's on the verge of being deranged. So I smoked a cigarette by the fire while trying to calm down. After, I don't know, an hour or so, a sudden scream came from Shirai's tent. That scream was definitely him. He couldn't deny that. I called over, "Are you okay?" He appeared at the tent entrance. Frothing saliva came from his lips, but he said calmly, as if nothing had happened, "What is it?" This time I made him leave the tent and sit by the fire. He was still chewing on the jerky, biting it, but not eating or swallowing it. He seemed to be sucking the flavor from it. I made him warm up by the fire, maybe 30 minutes passed. And then I felt a presence in the trees. It felt like someone was staring at me through that veil of darkness. It was so strange. I felt like I was surrounded. The hair on my arms and neck stood on end. I turned back to Shirai. He was still chewing on that damn jerky, and I started to remember something. Shirai was just an amateur camper. So when we got there, the first day I had noticed that he overpacked. When we were setting up, I had to help him spread out everything from his backpack and repack it properly. And thinking back on that, I thought about it over and over, but I was positive I hadn't seen any beef jerky in his supplies. So I asked him, "What are you chewing on?" He says, "It's bark from the tree. It's supposed to help the stomach and muscle pains, and my arm has been sore since I woke up this morning." Oh, silly me, I think to myself with dripping sarcasm. I forgot he's an expert at camping, but I pointed my flashlight at the tree where he had pointed. That's when I noticed that some of the blue vinyl tape was under a layer of bark. It was more exposed in that one area where Shirai had peeled back some bark to chew on. I started to wonder how long the tape had been there. It's so weird that the bark grew over the plastic tape, but then it struck me. Bark would not grow over the tape. That just doesn't happen. I jumped up and knocked the bark out of his hand and into the fire. It sizzled and popped. So now he's angry at Mina and he says, "Why'd you do that?" And I replied, "You idiot. That's not bark, that's human skin." Shirai stared dumbly into the fire, too surprised and shocked to be as disgusted as he should be. I said, "If you die during winter, your body gets mummified and your skin shrivels up like a gourd. It sticks to the trees and looks like bark. You pull off a piece of skin from a corpse, you idiot." Right then is when it turned from weird and disgusting to downright bizarro. He says the craziest thing to me. He says, "They told me it was okay, that it would help." I'm sure my voice was just as angry as it was shocked by this. I said, they who? What the hell are you talking about? A woman and a child. It was when you were in your tent. They said they want to see me, but the child was crying. I said, "What are you talking about?" But I wondered if maybe I had heard some ghost child's voice crying the night before. Not that I believed in that sort of thing, but you being in Jukai, it can mess with your mind. I think it can make you start to be a believer. So Shirai says, "They said something bad brought us here." Then he shrugs, still looking into the fire, as he continues, "But I don't know what to do. There's nothing we can do." He reached in his pocket and pulled out another piece of the skin that looked like beef jerky. He touched it to his lips. I couldn't disguise my revulsion, and I said, "That's disgusting. What's wrong with you? You know that's rotten human flesh, right?" I went to his tent and shined the flashlight inside. I noticed that the fabric on the floor of the tent was shredded all the way through to the cardboard below. Dirt was spread around the tent from a hole in the ground. It was like he had been digging through the tent and into the ground like some crazed out gopher. I also noticed that his gear was scattered in disarray all over the tiny pup tent. I mean, you expect stuff to be pulled out, but this looked like all the packing we had done was now undone. That's when I saw what looked like an old brown cleaning cloth on the floor of his tent. Something about it seemed off, and it definitely wasn't there when I helped him pack. Okay, now this is going to sound really, like, totally crazy, because it looked like that brown cloth had eyebrows.
Yeah.
Eyebrows. It took my mind a moment to process what I was seeing. It's just not something that I expected to see. I realized that what I was staring at there was peeled off skin from the face of a rotting corpse. Terror crept into me. This was like Texas chainsaw shit. I doubted what I had seen. It couldn't be real. So I thought, whatever, we'll deal with this in the morning. I told Shira I was going to bed and I went to my tent. I didn't even mention that mask looking thing that was a face. By then it must have been the middle of the night. For a long time, I just lay there in my tent, staring at the zipped up nylon flaps of the tent door. At some point, sleep overcame me. I don't know how much time passed, but I suddenly jerked awake. Sounds came from just outside the tent. T-Bag could hear hushed voices and whispers. And I also heard the sound of someone walking over the rocks. There were so many footsteps, and I knew it had to be more than one person. This wasn't Shirai, so who was it? And how many people were there? I turned on my headlamp. The dim light showed me that the battery must be almost dead. It illuminated, and I'm not making this up, and it scared the living daylights out of me. It illuminated the imprint of a hand pushing down on my tent from above. The indent was small, like the size of a child's hand. I yelled out, "Hello, who's there?" As if in response, a scream pierced the air. I don't even know how to describe it. It was like a dog trying to scream in a human language. The scream was followed by absolute silence. I held my breath and waited. I could hear my heartbeat, but nothing else. A moment later, I heard the sound of the zipper in my tent. Someone was trying to open it. I knew it was not Shirai. It's stupid, I know, but I pulled the sleeping bag tight up to my chin. I felt like some frightened child covering his head with the blankets so the bad thing won't get him. And I felt that heaviness and dread in the air. It was just as frightening as the hand pressing against the tent. Continued pointing my headlamp with its fading light right at the door. The zipper was still moving up, but slowly, really slowly, like something was having a problem unzipping it. When the zipper reached the halfway point, a black finger poked through the hole and started to push the zipper up. It looked like it was burnt or rotted. It was hard to tell with my barely working headlamp and the shadows. The nylon flap entrance flapped back and forth in a slight breeze. The finger pulled back out of view and something else pushed in. I'm shivering here just thinking about it. I mean, no one will believe this, but it's true that the thing pressing through the opening in the flap looked like a mud log with hair, but also with teeth. It was someone's head. A rotting, decomposing face stared back at me, but the face of whom or what? It was black and hideous and corpse-like. It had long black hair all tangled and knotted, so I assume it must have been a woman in life. I really felt about screaming then, but Shire beat me to it. His scream pierced the air from over in his tent with unbelievable quickness. The head pulled out of my tent and disappeared in the darkness through the now open gap in the tent door. I saw two sets of feet. Two people stood just outside the tent facing me. One set of feet seemed to be adult size, and the other was clearly a child. I hit my headlamp with my hand, hoping to get more light, but the bare feet were draped in shadow, and I couldn't see anything else. After a moment, the feet moved, and whoever was out there started pushing on the tent from the outside. Not just one hand, but like shoving and pushing at it from all sides. This is just a small pup tent, mind you, so that's not hard to do. What do you do in that situation? I just shrank into my sleeping bag. I didn't think it could get worse, but then it did. Another pushing started, but it was from below me. I felt like some zombie buried alive was trying to rise from the grave to reach in and pull me down. I jumped in surprise, and then believe it or not, the terror overcame me. I did something I've never done before since I passed out, just completely blacked out. And when I woke, it was morning and light outside, but the memory came back to me in a flash and I jumped out of the tent. Outside, I saw that Shirai's tent was completely shredded and Shirai was gone. I called out his name, yelled it in each direction into the trees. Panic completely overwhelmed me. I heard a man's voice in the distance who was singing something. Maybe it was Shirai. I certainly hoped it was, because if not, well, I don't know. So I followed the singing about 50 yards into the forest and found a flat area. Sure enough, Shirai was singing as he stood in front of a tree. I suppose what really caught my attention was that a body was hanging from the tree in front of him. It swayed back and forth. The body must have been there for a long time. The rope had stretched the neck to an inhuman length. It looked like a shriveled mummy with some meat still on the bones. I guessed it to have been a middle-aged man, but honestly, it was hard to tell because his face had peeled off. Yes, the face had peeled off. I mean, it took a few seconds for my brain to process that information and synthesize it with that shriveled face of skin I had seen in Shirai's tent. But when I realized this, I ran to Shirai, grabbed him, and pulled him away from the swinging corpse. I dragged him back to our campsite. He continued singing the whole way until we reached our tents. He seemed to finally come back to himself, which is good because I was about to literally slap some sense into him. I was truly that frightened and panicked, and I knew we had to get out of there. We quickly packed up the tents, even his shredded tent. We just haphazardly stuffed our items into our backpacks. When we were done packing and I looked down at the ground, I finally knew what had happened. All the pieces suddenly fit together, but honestly, who can ever know these things for sure? So when we set up the tents, we had set cardboard down at the bottom to act as a padding between the tent and the ground. The cardboard was pretty much shredded by the events of the previous night, but when we pulled it back, we could see that the ground underneath had been flattened by our weight. It was kind of like pressed into clay. So where these indents of our bodies were, I saw bones poking through the ground. No wonder we never found the bodies. We had set up our tents right over them. It was daylight, so I had some of my courage back, and we decided to dig up the bones. There were two skeletons. One still had long black hair clinging to it. The other was clearly a child. Someone had buried them under 1 or 2 inches of soil. It can't get much more shallow than that. And we had slept over them for 2 nights. I'm putting the pieces together while we dig up the skeletons. And I realize that the hanging man must have killed his wife and child here. Then he buried them with just enough dirt to cover their bodies. And he wandered off a little to hang himself. Or maybe it was a family suicide pact and the wife came willingly. I've heard of those happening in Jukai as well. But that didn't make sense to me either. Someone had clearly hanged themselves at the tree right next to our campfire, and that body had long since decomposed and melted into the tree, for lack of a better term. That was the skin Shirai had been chewing on. Could these be two separate incidents? And, I mean, why would they be skeletons and the father still had flesh on his bones? None of it makes sense. It was just a big mystery to me, like some sort of time loop through hell. And I know I'll never have the answer. I could have brought back bones, I could have brought back skulls like I had wanted for 9 trips into the forest, but something didn't seem right about it now. Plus, what if I bring back bones and the spirits follow? What if the father was the evil thing bringing us there? Or what if it was something inhuman drawing people there and driving them crazy? A man and his wife, someone who hanged themselves on this tree long ago, and Shirai starting to go crazy? Would something come searching us out? I didn't know. I don't know. I'll never know. I just knew we had to get out of there before I started to go crazy myself. All these thoughts made me think of something else. I said to Shirai, leave it. He said, trying to sound innocent, leave what? I don't know if this was feigned ignorance. He may still have been a little bit crazy. So I just went straight to his backpack. He tried to pull it out of my reach, but I yanked it back and started to dig through it. I pulled out the long flap of skin that I thought was a cleaning cloth, but was actually the skin from the man's face. This made me think that Shirai had found the hanged man the night before. He went a whole day without saying anything about it. As I held it in my hands, I could again see the eyebrows. That image will never leave my mind. I threw the skin to the ground and started hiking down. I didn't turn back to see if Shirai picked up the skin or any bones or anything. I was done. If ghosts or demons wanted to follow him, that's fine. I wouldn't have any part of it. We went home quickly. Actually, I never spoke to Shirai again, but I could never get the image of that peeled skin out of my mind. I'll always remember seeing the eyebrows and the 2 empty holes where eyes had once been, where eyes had peered out before life was taken from them.
These types of paranormal events are frequently reported from Jukai. But the mystique of Jukai goes far beyond suicides and murders and corpses. In our next episode, we explore the mysteries of Jukai, the Lake of Blood, the spirit monks, the domestic terrorists using it as a front, the sounds and phantoms, and even the cursed altar that won't let you leave. And the most famous legend of all, the legend of the woman in the red dress. All this and more. Next time on Mysterious Japan. Please visit our website at themysteriousjapan.com. We look forward to you joining us again next time. Thank you.